Tomorrow, Princeton University Press will reissue the Kerner Report. The controversial 1968 document was assembled by the National Advisory Committee on Civil Disorders after a series of riots in American cities in the mid-1960s. It offered a window into the roots of racism and inequality in the United States. One of its findings was particularly stark. Quote, "Our nation is moving towards two societies, one black, one white, separate and unequal." Now, 48 years later, Lester Graham from Here and Now contributor Michigan Radio has this report on why the Kerner Commission's recommendations were ignored and why in an age of Black Lives Matter activism, the report's lessons still resonate today. And a warning that his story contains language that some listeners may find objectionable.
It was called the Long Hot Summer. 1967 saw dozens of racial uprisings in cities such as Newark, Boston, and Detroit. And Detroit's was the worst. 43 people were killed and more than 1,000 injured, most of them black. Thousands of National Guard troops and police were already in the streets. The mayor and the governor wanted more help. President Lyndon Johnson sent in 5,000 U.S. Army troops.
I take this action with the greatest regret and only because of the clear, the unmistakable, and the undisputed evidence that Governor Romney of Michigan and the local officials in Detroit have been unable to bring the situation under control.
Before the fires in Detroit were out, Johnson spoke to the nation again. He was appointing an 11-member advisory commission on civil disorders. It was chaired by then-Illinois Governor Otto Kerner and became known as the Kerner Commission.
The commission will investigate the origins of the recent disorders in our cities. It will make recommendations to me, to the Congress, to the state governors, and to the mayors for measures to prevent or contain such disasters in the future.
The president wanted to know why. Why did these uprisings happen? Within 7 months, the Kerner Commission had an answer. Nathaniel R. Jones was assistant general counsel for the commission.
One of the conclusions of the Kerner report was that white racism was the cause of the upsets and the uprisings that we had. In fact, the report stated that white society created it, perpetuates it, and sustains it.
In other words, white racism, white attitudes were the underlying reasons for racial unrest in the cities. Many white politicians and news media vehemently resisted that finding. Detroit had been seen by the nation as a model of race relations. Blacks were getting jobs in Detroit that simply were not available to people of color in much of the rest of the country. Overlooked was the fact that Detroit African Americans often were given the hardest and dirtiest jobs, often were passed up for promotions, and generally made less money. Housing was inferior. Unemployment among people of color was higher. Relationships with police were strained.
The commission said in its report that there was a combination of complex social, psychological, poverty problems all tangled up, which create this feeling on the part of people that they can't trust authority. And that was true as a lead into what happened in the 60s, and it's true now.
The report's most quoted conclusion read, "Our nation is moving toward two societies, one black, one white, separate and unequal." Joe T. Darden is a professor at Michigan State University and co-author of a book on the 1967 Detroit riots. He says the Kerner Report challenged whites' attitudes about blacks, and he says that made President Johnson worry it would damage the Democrats' chance to keep the White House. So publicly, Johnson barely acknowledged the report.
The report put the responsibility for all of this stuff on white society and white institutions. That, I think, was a surprise to some white Americans, and I think that that was part of the reason he was very careful not to upset the large segment of white society. That was why I think that it happened like that.
Another factor in President Johnson's silence on the Kerner Report was his own ego. He felt the report ignored the accomplishments of his Great Society programs. But in a 1969 interview for the LBJ Library, Commission Chair Otto Kerner said praising Johnson's work would give the report a political flavor the commission members did not want. Kerner said Johnson privately told him he was working quietly to implement Kerner Report recommendations.
He says, you know, we've been trying to do these things that you've recommended in the report. And as you know, Congress has not very acceptable to the things that I proposed. Mm-hmm. But he said, I want you to know that I have the members of the cabinet, the White House staff people are still trying to have accepted those things I've already recommended.
But that's not what Johnson told one of his political buddies. A phone call between Johnson and Chicago Mayor Richard J. Daley reveals Johnson had problems with the report. By then, Johnson had announced he would not seek another term as president, but his former Attorney General, Robert F. Kennedy, was running, and Kennedy pushed the Kerner Report recommendations. Johnson also felt the commission's vice chair, New York Mayor John Lindsay, had pushed the commission too far.
And Bobby just gave me hell today for not carrying out the Kerner Commission study. Well, I didn't realize when I appointed Kerner that this son of a bitch from New York, Lindsay, would take charge. He did take charge, and he recommended I hire 2.5 million people on federal payroll, and I've not wanted to reflect on Kerner and criticize the commission. At the same time, I couldn't embrace it because I've got a budget.
That Johnson budget had doubled because of the Vietnam War. Nearly five decades later, that report by the Kerner Commission is still considered one of the most insightful documents on race relations and remedies for discrimination to ever be published by the government. Michigan State University professor Joe T. Darden says the cost of ignoring the Kerner Report set opportunities for African Americans back decades.
That would have eliminated this separation we have, central city, suburb, white, suburb, black, central city, white affluent, black poverty. That would have prevented that. They didn't take that alternative. What the Kerner Commission really decided to do.
Some scholars argue that Americans, white Americans, have not learned the lesson of the 1960s uprisings or the recommendations to correct the problems.
In the wake of the Kerner Report, we have created two societies that are deeply unequal. That is a fact.
Heather Ann Thompson is a professor at the University of Michigan and wrote the book Who's Detroit?
The inequality, income inequality, racial inequality, suburban, city inequality, job inequality, we could just go on and on and on, is far worse. And that is a deeply racialized inequality. So we've done that. The question remains, what do we do next?
Resentment surrounding issues of race has been building over those decades. Resentment among blacks who still find themselves at the bottom of the economic ladder, and resentment among whites who've been knocked down a rung or two. Paul Lee is a Detroit historian who's written on the 1967 uprising in Detroit. He says things are not any better today than they were in the 1960s, and perhaps worse. He says the protests we've seen in the last couple of years are revealing.
Our situation, that is the situation of African Americans in Detroit and throughout the country, I think is much more precarious than it's been perhaps in a century.
The reason, says Lee, is the shaky economic underpinnings of black neighborhoods. Few blacks own their own homes, a significant factor in building wealth. The relatively few middle-class black families who could afford it later followed white families to the suburbs. With them went black businesses. The little economic power African Americans had slipped away. But there was optimism, because in some cities, political power grew for black Americans. Black mayors and city council members were elected. But Paul Lee says political power is limited.
While I think that black political power is important, I think that if there's no economic foundation, then black power is relatively meaningless. Black political power is relatively meaningless.
The shift from black power in the 1960s to today's Black Lives Matter seems to be slipping from a demand to have a seat at the table to the request, please don't kill us. But Black Lives Matter isn't the only protest movement. In Detroit, dating back to at least the takeover by an emergency manager and then bankruptcy, new groups have been raising their voices in and around the city. There are protests for economic inclusion, against foreclosures and water shutoffs, and against police brutality.
No racist police! No racist police!
We're skeptical of government because government isn't serving us.
Reverend Charles Williams II is the president of the Michigan chapter of National Action Network. He says people are frustrated that in many ways life in Detroit is worse now than it was in 1967.
As we see our struggle today, we see that some of those same issues are ahead of us. And so this is the reason why we must continue to organize, and it's the reason why we continue to organize.
Heather Ann Thompson, the University of Michigan professor, says policymakers today largely are ignoring issues in the same way policymakers ignored them in the 1960s.
The good news is that we now, I think, are really hearing from those people who have suffered this very directly. And that's why Ferguson has blown up. And that's why Baltimore has exploded. And that's why people across cities in America or cities across America are speaking out and saying, no, we need a different civil rights movement, right? We need a different moment of change.
And to be effective, that change will have to negotiate opportunities for African Americans to be included in both political and economic power, just as the Kerner Report recommended nearly five decades ago. For Here and Now, I'm Lester Graham.
And we had assistance on this, reporting assistance from Bill McGraw with Bridge Magazine, and production assistance on this story from the Oral History Project at the Lyndon Baines Johnson Presidential Library in Austin, Texas.